Traveling the Vortex.
We've joined the Doctor as he travels the Vortex in our episode 589, and if there's one thing I've learned from him, is usually you can save the universe with a spoon. I'm Keith.
I'm Sean.
I'm Glenn.
How are you, fellas?
I think we've all been better.
Sean, you're in recovery mode.
I am. My apologies, listeners. I've been responsible for this extended, I can't necessarily call it a hiatus, but it was an extended illness. I had a bad sinus infection, and then that turned into, wow, I've lost my words.
Strep. First.
Yeah, it turned into strep throat, and then that turned into bronchitis. And just a dry hacking cough that I wasn't bringing anything up, and lost my voice for a month. I quite literally, this is the best I have sounded since Juneteenth. So my apologies for not being there for you, but I kind of alternated between a whispery squeak, and when I got a little bit better, it was kind of Barry White, and but still very hoarse, so. Feeling much better now.
Still not quite all the way there.
Yeah, I don't have quite the same range available to me at the moment.
The dulcet tones.
You said you had a partially collapsed lung too, didn't you?
Yeah, from all the coughing. Oof. I partially collapsed lung, and then on the 4th of July, actually, I was sore. I had joked that, man, I'm going to have great abs by the time this is all, you know, said and done, because of all the crunches from convulsing and coughing. And I had got up in the morning on the 4th and just was super, super sore on my right side and was probing it a little bit. Coughing fit came on and something popped. And then it became a, wow, I can't take a breath. I can't bend over. I can't do this. I can't turn. So we went to the ER and actually spent the morning. I forget how many doctor's appointments and emergency room visits and urgent care visits that we had during all this. But went to the ER and they said, oh, yeah, well, you either bruised or cracked a rib. Go home. I was like, okay, thanks.
Jeez.
Is that before or after the lung? So, yeah, it's been quite the trial by fire.
Well, I'm glad you're feeling better.
It's nice to be feeling better. I feel like, you know, all I did was sleep. And, you know, of course, I get super guilty, I feel, because Mel's running the household at that point, and all I'm doing is sleeping. She's like, well, you're sick. And it's like, yeah, but burned through all my PTO. It's just, what do you do?
Not much you can do at that point.
No. And you'd think, hey, I'm going to get some movies watched. No, I'm just going to go back to bed and sleep because I'm not sleeping at night because I'm coughing all night long.
Yeah, sometimes when you're that sick, you can't even do the movies, which kind of sucks because that's when you have all the time to do the movies.
Yeah. Yeah, it was pretty terrible. 1 star, do not recommend.
I trust everybody's well at your place, Keith.
Yeah, for the most part. Oh, I'm a little sore here and there from random things, but, you know, we're all pretty good.
Yep.
How are things in your household?
Pretty much the same. I've just had some back issues, but it's something I just deal with. Comes and goes all the time. So we get arthritis in my lower back, and so I do something just right, and it twinges it, and I'm down for weeks. But enough about my ailments. Should we talk about some news? There's some news while we were on hiatus.
Yeah.
Some news.
Fairly exciting news that Jodie Whittaker and Mandip Gill are returning to Doctor Who in some Big Finish audio dramas.
Yay.
a full series of 13th Doctor audio dramas. You can pre-order the first set now on Big Finish, and they're going to come out starting in July of next year. So we've got a year to wait, but there is going to be 12 hour-long full-cast audio adventures in this series.
12 hours long? I guess it would be.
That's right.
I guess it ultimately
that's a
it
full
would
series.
Be. Yeah, full series. 12 hours. I'm looking forward to it. She's the first doctor to come to Big Finish, new doctor to come to Big Finish since David Tennant. So,
well, and Christopher Eccleston.
Well, that's true. She's the first doctor, new doctor to come to. I forgot all about Chris. She's the first one since Chris Eccleston, I guess I should say then, because he came after.
You were just going in doctor order.
I was, yeah, but doctor order. That's not fair because David Tennant did it first. Mm-hmm. Well, that's exciting news. I'm looking forward to listening to those.
Yeah, I'm really. I think we've all always enjoyed Jodie's performance as the Doctor, and so having someone else write for her and Yaz, I think, is really exciting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would agree. What else we got?
The other bit of news is we know our next Blu-ray set, which will be season 25, also known in the U.S. as Sylvester McCoy season 2.
Yay!
That'll be.
Although I don't think I've seen an official announcement for U.S. yet.
Has there been a release date for the U.K. even? I just saw them announce it.
October 21st.
Oh, okay. This year. Well, there's a chance we might get it after Christmas. Way they've been going.
Again, you think you'd get it done ahead of Christmas so people can have it for Christmas presents, but
guess not. That'll be all. By the time we do that, we'll have all of McCoy. We've already got all of Colin Baker. Well, we got hardly any of.
I didn't think we had.
Oh no,
trial.
We've got two. Yeah, we got trial. Yep. Yeah, we got both seasons of.
Don't have Twin Dilemma yet.
We don't. Well, that's true.
We have all of Colin but Twin Dilemma.
Right, because I'm assuming that'll be on the end of the last Davison season, because that actually was part of his season.
Yeah. Odd as it is.
They're going to do that with, I hope, they're going to do that with the First Doctor as well, because there's what? Two or three War Games start that season or ended that season? I can't remember. Two or three before Troughton took over in that season that we're done.
Not War Games. That was the end of Troughton.
Yeah. War Machines. Sorry, War Machines. Yeah.
Tenth Planet.
Well, Tenth Planet for sure, but there's two others before that that are in that same season. And I want to say The Savages is one, and I think maybe The War Machines is the other one.
I think you might be right.
I could be wrong on War Machines. I can't remember for sure.
If it's war, it's War Machines.
Well, I mean, I can't remember. Yes. I misspoke with War Games. I meant War Machines, but I don't know if War Machines is actually first or that previous season or the season.
I tell you, there's a graphic that I forwarded on to you guys that shows we now have 16 out of 26 classic Who seasons on Blu-ray in the collection. And that just seems insane to me.
Really? Why?
You know, it really does. I know they've been coming. I know it's been a while that we've been getting them and, you know, one, two a year. But yet at the same time, classic Who occupies such a huge swath of time and space on my shelf and just sheer number of episodes. And then to look at this graphic and go, yeah, we're over halfway done. Mm-hmm. And you know that we only have 10 left. And yes, unfortunately the bulk of those are first and second doctors, as you would expect, but you know, we are moving right along on getting these things released. And it just, I don't know. It's mind boggling to me in a way.
Yeah.
The War Machines ended season three. Okay. The Smugglers begin the season.
Smugglers,
four.
Yeah, Smugglers.
And then it goes Tenth Planet and Power of the Daleks. Yeah.
Not the Savages. Smugglers. I knew it started with an S.
Makes me wonder how they're going to brand those in the U.S.
It'll be Troughton's first season. We'll have Savages and
Smugglers.
Tenth Planet. Or sorry. Yeah, Smugglers and Tenth Planet. Why, I can't think straight right now. Yeah, it'll have Smugglers and Tenth Planet on it, I'm sure. Just like Peter Davison's last season. Yeah, we'll have Colin Baker's first episode on it. Well, let's talk about what we came along to talk about, which is Empire of Death, with the finale of the first season of the 15th Doctor era.
Empire of Death. The Doctor has lost. His ageless enemy reigns supreme, and a shadow is falling over creation. Nothing can stop the devastation, except perhaps one woman.
Bum, bum, bum.
One woman, maybe, possibly, who knows?
Possibly. Maybe. Could have been a red herring, you don't know.
Kind of was a red herring.
Yeah. All right, who's going first? I'll go first. It was a good finale. It wasn't a great finale. I think I liked the previous week's episode much better, and I think because it led up to the big cliffhanger reveal. I find it hard to buy that Sutek's been riding on the TARDIS all this time. because there's a lot of things that happened to that TARDIS. Like, was Sutek riding on the back of the shoulders of Idris while that was happening? And was the...
He was just tagging along during the Time War, not trying to take advantage of that at all?
Exactly. That whole...
Or when it exploded?
That whole concept, I thought, is sort of clever, but it just, when you start to break down everything that's happened since Pyramids, it just doesn't work.
I think it would have been a clever idea had he hitched a ride at the edge of the universe.
Yes.
So had he just been along this season, I think it would have made a lot more sense.
Absolutely. And I thought that's where they were going to go with it.
So did I at first.
Yeah. It just, yeah. There's a lot of wow, gee whiz, bang, willikers, cool ideas at work here. And the idea of Sutek riding all over the universe is a very nifty one. I mean, really. But it's not terribly practical.
Yeah.
Once you start to think about it and analyze it and go, well, now, but wait a minute, what about this? And that's kind of the death of this episode, is the minute you get into the, well, what about, then the whole thing starts to fall apart. And it's worse than those episodes that are really, really amazing and super well constructed, except for that one little thread that you pluck at and go, well, what about this? And then the whole thing unravels, because this is many of those threads. You know, it's a Christmas sweater that didn't quite get knitted together all the way. And I like the fact, for example, that Ruby's mom is a nobody.
Mm-hmm.
I am all for that. I shouldn't say nobody, because as we all know, we've never heard of somebody who's not important. But she just was. It's like, okay, cool. That knocks out all of that fan nonsense about, oh, she's so-and-so's, you know, daughter and this, that, and the other. Okay, great, fantastic. Why does it snow?
Mm-hmm. And why build it up as much as they did? They could leave it as a mystery of, oh, we don't know who she is, and let's go find out, and the doctor's trying to do all this stuff because he thinks, you know, nothing in his life is simple, So why would this mystery be simple as well? Mm-hmm. But it's the whole hooded cloak and pointing thing just makes the entire mystery too much over the top.
It did.
Had they not done that, it would have just been a mystery of whoever it is.
That's kind of the nail because, yeah, I mean, I remember pointing at things that I named my kids after. Not.
When no one else is around to see it.
Right.
Except the doctor.
Because there's no way she knew he was there. There was no way she knew he had any significance in the whole thing.
If any time travelers are watching, the road sign. Name her after the road sign. Okay. We're on it. Yeah, that just kind of doesn't work for me. And I've seen subsequently in interviews, it didn't work for me before the interviews. And it definitely didn't work for me after the time beam. Anybody know, heard about that one?
I haven't heard about the time beam.
Time beam? No.
Yeah. So we're there and we're doing our thing. And then Sutek recalls the doctor and Ruby and Mel from somewhere else in time and space and basically beams them back to unit headquarters without a TARDIS. They just appear. And there's no explanation given for it. He just says, you return, and poof, they're there. And it's like, how? How did that work? What was it? And Russell T. Davies, apparently in interviews since the airing of this, has admitted, yeah, we screwed up. I didn't want to do it. I couldn't figure out a way around it. We did it. I won't do it again. And it's like, come on, dude. You got to lie to me a little. You gotta come up with something better than that. Because I'm watching the episode and they just blink into existence back at Unit Tower. And it's like, okay, how? And I guess Sutek was just that powerful that he could do that now. All right, I'll let it go, but I don't really want to.
I guess it becomes a question of if it was a transmat teleport. Or because I, when watching it, I just assumed, oh, well, he was somehow able to teleport, use teleportation and stuff because it's already in the future anyways. And that he's just been hanging out there in Unit HQ. And now that they're back on Earth, he just plucks them over to where he is as opposed to pulling them through time back to when he was.
Right. And, you know, had Russell came out and said, futuristic unit transmat beam, I'd have gone, oh, okay.
Or even I would have let him write it off. Powers to like teleport and transmat beams to him within the same like planets. I could swallow that more than
I would have let him write that off. Absolutely. But just to do it and not explain it and then later come out and go, yeah, I screwed up. I was like, oh, come on. You're pulling threads for me now. I'm trying to stay positive on it because, and, you know, and we've been through this before. When you do a two-parter, endings are hard. It's always more difficult to stick the landing than it is to set up something incredible.
Well, this is sort of par for the course for RTD.
Yeah. This one definitely falls into that amazing setup, not so great landing. But I really appreciate it. The return of the, essentially the power gloves. What was it called?
Oh yeah.
I'm just calling
the Mavity gloves.
Intelligent rope.
Oh yeah, I forgot.
It was intelligent gloves. That's what it was.
So I appreciated that callback and that then using that as a leash. on Sutek and, you know, dragging him back through the vortex to, you know, wibbly wobbly timey wimey somehow fix everything that had gone wrong. Okay, yeah, I'll let you get away with that one because that's just fun.
And the visuals of, you know, him being dragged through the vortex and ripping open holes of to bring things back to life was so well done and so well realized that I was willing to be okay with all of that.
even more so, I think the lead up to it was a lot of fun because we had all this, mm-hmm. you know, going on and Mel being possessed and all. And then it was like, okay, where do we go from here? And then when he recalls him and the Doctor and Ruby enact their plan and then give us a little flashback as to the setup of it, I thought that was kind of mm-hmm. clever because I didn't see any of that coming. I thought, okay, how are they going to get out of this? You know, I really did think I have no idea where this is going. And so when they were called back and then they kicked the plan into action, I was like, oh, this is the Doctor. This is the Doctor being the Doctor. I thought that was really well done. And then everything you guys said about, you know, hooking him and dragging him through the vortex, I thought that was great. And I was the same way, Sean. I was like, I don't know how this works, but I'll allow it.
it's Christmas. Yeah. You know? Okay. Yeah. We're just gonna roll with it.
Yeah.
It makes as much sense as his death dust going everywhere. So.
Oh yeah.
Now. One thing that I feel very cheated on, and for me, this was probably the weakest point of the episode. Of all of the weak points, this is the one that really stumbled for me, is the extended sequence on Planet X with Woman Y and, you know, missing Child Z with all of the, you know, death has come for everybody and this is the explanation, and then the Doctor shows up and apologizes, and it's dropped in there and it's meant to try and give some weight to the proceedings. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't long enough and it wasn't involved enough, quite honestly,
yeah,
for it to be anything other than who is this person and why should I care? And then it's kind of established you're just supposed to care because this is the human face that we're putting to it.
All right.
And it's like, oh, well,
Tate was enough okay. of a human face for me to care.
Yeah. Quite honestly, if you're going to give me that and not invest a little more into it, then I'd rather just had Kate or Mel or one of the established characters that is going through this, because we already have that attachment. So you don't need to build up a backstory, but if you're going to build up a backstory and make me really feel for these people.
Mm-hmm. It dropped us in such an intriguing area that they really could have developed more into what was going on with the universe and, you know, how had they gotten to these places and how had some people survived and not others. I mean, they almost could have set a whole season in between of a post-apocalyptic
yeah.
universe at that point.
And that would have been I have to be careful with this. I don't know that necessarily would have been satisfying. Like, you end the season with Sutek wins, and then you come back the next season and it's all despair across the universe for 8 episodes showing how badly it is under Sutek. And then the Doctor comes back with this plan and wins. Okay, maybe that would have, you know, elevated it up a little bit. Maybe it would have been too much. I don't know. I don't think Disney would have been ready for that.
No.
But it, you know, it certainly felt like you could have done more with it.
Yeah.
You could have given me another 10 or 15 minutes of, if you're going to go that direction with it, let's really kind of play with that idea some and make me feel easy, because otherwise it's just it comes across as hollow. Yeah. And it's not earned.
Right.
And that to me is kind of the biggest problem. I liked the final or the first show up of the Memory TARDIS.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I did not like that Mel just kind of apparently expired off screen in the tale. If you were to watch Tales of the TARDIS number 7 chronologically within this episode, she kind of dies while they're doing the flashback.
Oh, is that right?
Is she wearing the same outfit?
Yeah.
Oh, I see. No, I see what you're saying.
Yeah, I mean, she just,
like they did for Pyramids of Mars,
because they pull them all in, and then you would stop and watch Tales from the TARDIS, and then you would come back to this episode. So if you watched it chronologically, oh yeah, she's not there for reasons. Like, okay, that's terrible.
Well, they kept it as such tight shots, and she's off in the corner being tired. I mean, she's taking a nap, oh. They tell Ruby the story.
Yeah.
Mel's probably heard it before, and she fell asleep listening to it again.
Yeah.
But beyond those problems, it was fun, and it was a fitting end to the season. I think it works much better as part of the first part than it does as a standalone, you know, because the you look at it as we're doing, you look at it on its own and it really kind of falls apart. Mm-hmm. But if you were to look at both pieces together, okay, the setup is still better than the ending, but at least it's a little more cohesive than what I think we're kind of giving it credit for at this point.
Right.
The other part of it that, as the longer I've sat with it, the more it bothered me is, you know, Sutek's interest in Ruby's mom. Why would he really care? Just because it's something he doesn't know? Is he that much of a gossip hound that he has to know everything?
I see what you did there.
just kill everything. I mean, that's what he wants to do. So why would he even bother trying to find out who this woman is? In the grand scheme of things, if he wants everyone dead, it doesn't really matter anyways.
Right, right.
So even while watching it, I felt a little bit of, really, that's why he's keeping them alive, so he can find out who her mother is? I just have a hard time swallowing that as a motivation for keeping the Doctor and Ruby alive.
Yeah.
It's also a little torn over the redesign, reimagining of Sutek. Not necessarily that, oh, they changed him from the papier-mâché looking dog thing, you know, that the fourth Doctor fought, but so according to Pyramids of Mars, Sutek was an Osirian.
Mm-hmm.
And the Osirians basically inspired ancient Egyptian culture.
Mm-hmm.
Or appropriated it one way
or appropriated. Well, you know, it's written off now as cultural appropriation, which, you know, okay, I get. It's not like Classic Who. If you're going to accuse Classic Who of things, you can accuse it of many things, and political correctness is not always one of those things that it's I get it. But is it if you reverse it, if it's cultural appropriation, I mean, I guess outside of the universe, you are appropriating a culture to represent an alien.
But in universe, you're right. It is implied in Pyramids that they inspired the Egyptian gods.
Right. And I don't know, maybe it's my old schoolness. Maybe it's my love of Pyramids of Mars as a story. I don't know that I necessarily needed that to be explained away and changed. I said, I don't mind that they changed Sutek himself design-wise because, well, hanging on the back of the TARDIS and being exposed to the time vortex, yes, he's going to evolve some. He would have to. Well, I'm fine with that.
He essentially levels up his god abilities, and, you know, I assume the physical changes are part of that as well.
Right.
I like the look of it, the new Sutek. I thought he looked great.
Yeah, he was very, very cool and creepy and
I wish he did more, though, other than hang on the back of the TARDIS. I would have liked to see him do more things in the episode.
Almost like he was afraid to let go of it because he'd been so long on it. You know?
Maybe he's stuck in that position. The other thing I thought of while watching it, and I don't know if it was an intentional nod or not, but it feels his whole Death Sand sweeping the universe felt very much like the Flux, especially considering how recent the Flux was. And so I don't know if it was an intentional nod to that and that he would have saw it and said, hey, that's a good idea, I'll do that, or if it was unintentional and I'm just reading more into that. I'm not sure how I feel about it. It just feels a little, not redundant, but repetitive.
I can see that.
Because it's the same idea. It's especially once we go off to the other planet and we see that people survived. It's them running away from this wave of something, and it's killing everything.
Yeah. I didn't think about that at the time, but I could see that.
This, the way it's done, makes more sense than the Flux did, because they really explained the Flux well enough. What'd you guys think of the goodbye between the Doctor and Ruby?
Oh, I thought it was fine, especially knowing she's coming back next season. So it wasn't like so long
I think
forever.
Even if she doesn't, it was a nice goodbye.
Yeah, it was.
What do we think about Mrs. Flood and her cryptic fourth wall break at the end?
I don't think anything now, because she was kind of fun to speculate on in the first of the season when we thought she was going to have more to do. And then just to have her on the roof making whatever comments she makes at the end of that, I was just like, eh.
What intrigued me more was the comments she was making to Jerry, you know, as they're being turned to sand, as they get snapped.
Yeah.
About how, you know, I will storm the gates and I had such plans. That stuff gives me more, you know, intrigue than the comments to the camera.
The reason why I'm kind of indifferent about it now is, though, not that those aren't cool setups, but they're cool setups that who knows when they're going to play out, you know. She may be the next big mystery to solve. There may be more to her character than meets the eye. But because you bookended it with this woman that you did nothing with the whole season, I'm kind of indifferent to who this person is. I don't care who Mrs. Flood is at this point. I'll wait to find out later. You know, I'm not even going to speculate anymore.
It does make me think that maybe she is still who the toy maker was referring to more so than Tech.
Yeah.
This is not really Sutek's MO to work with other people, and I don't see how the other gods we've had really, you know, the way they made it sound was they were working on behest of another god almost, and nothing in this conveyed that at all either.
Yeah,
that he had minions working for him or anything like that.
It didn't come across that way, I agree, but I mean, they set up this whole pantheon of chaos, and he's sort of at the top, so I think that was implied that he was the big bad that everybody was scared of. All the other gods didn't want to mess with. So.
There's the only thing we can do is wait and see for sure.
Right, right.
There's a friend of the show, Rick Cross, had an absolutely fascinating theory on Mrs. Flood, and he posted on his Facebook page, and I was like, oh my god, I think he's nailed it, because it's really good. Of course, now I can't find it, so it's not worth talking about, but
Well, have you guys seen the comparisons of her costumes? They appear to be mimicking previous companions' costumes.
Yes, there was a I forget now who all was included in that. There was a Clara and a
Romana, clearly at the
Romana.
End. I don't remember the other one. Oh, Rory, because of the vest. I think there's only been really the three. So.
I think people are finding coincidence
reaching.
Yeah, I think they're finding. I think it's a reach. I think all they're doing is finding coincidence.
The only thing that makes me question if it's not a reach so much is the outfit on the rooftop. That seems really out of left field of an outfit to wear for no reason.
Well, yeah, but I mean, when she's revealing herself to us as the audience as something bigger, she's doing something grand. So
that's true.
I'm trying. Yeah, like I say, I'm not even following any of the speculation, because at this point I don't care. It doesn't, you know, speculate till the cows come home, and we'll be wrong until we get any more, you know, information. There's just not enough there. Right. Not enough seeds were planted this season for me to go, I wonder if she's this. You know, just it didn't. I don't, once they didn't deal with that, I was like, okay, well, I don't care anymore.
Oh, here it is. Do you want to know? I found it. Do you want to know what his thought is?
Sure.
You don't care.
I don't care, but go ahead. Listeners might. I'm buying one.
In the words of Rick Cross, I'm calling it here and now. Upon further reflection on the most recent season of Doctor Who, Mrs. Flood is the master of the land of fiction.
Yeah, I do remember
from that. The Mine Robber.
And no, somehow she probably expelled
from her realm.
No, she probably
probably owing to the 14th Doctor's shenanigans with the Salt and now meddling in human affairs as she lays the groundwork for her plan to reclaim her kingdom and wreak punishment on the Doctor's head by way of his friends and family. Note her repeated use of the story of Ruby Sunday, the Doctor's story, language that echoes the rhythms of the Mind Robber. And it was she who manipulated the toy maker and maestro and the rest of this season's enemies into place, rewriting our reality just enough to give magical beings more control and sway so that she may profit. I think it's a brilliant theory.
Yeah, that's okay.
The official podcast theorized that it was an unseen, previously unseen god of stories. So it definitely seems to be leaning towards that direction one way or another.
I think it fits in with the whole fanciful fairy tale kind of direction things have gone so far this season. It that to me is a very appropriate way to lean into things. And so
I would be okay with her being the master of the land of fiction. I think that the problem I have with that, it would be if somehow he's been stuck around all this time, if there was no way to, you know, to, if there's a clever way to make that work, that's better than an ancient god clinging to the TARDIS for so many episodes, then I'll be okay with that. But
somebody else had taken over the role as the master of the land of fiction. Wasn't it just the
that's
one
right,
guy?
Because it wanted,
he wanted the doctor to take the doctor over. To it was take more over. Like a non-sentient, non-physical, non-corporeal being.
Yeah.
And, you know,
using him.
Yeah. So maybe this is the master of the land of fiction given physical form in our universe.
Could be.
Well, I suppose as with most things, time will tell.
Right.
But I think that's a far more exciting and a far more likely version of events than, oh, it's Clara.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, well, come on, guys. It's not Clara.
No, that was...
We're not going to go there with it.
Some of the things people have come up with, I've kind of looked at and went, ah, okay, maybe. I doubt it. I highly doubt the Clara one, but...
Yeah.
Well, what else? Well, if we don't have anything, you can find us at our website, travelingthevortex.com. If you get any value out of this podcast, why not consider putting some value back into it? You can do that by clicking on our Patreon link and consider supporting us there. Also, be sure to give us 5 stars wherever we subscribe to this podcast, and it helps bump us up in the ratings and recommendations. And, of course, make sure to join in the conversation on our listeners forum on Facebook. There you can engage with other listeners and share your thoughts and insights with us and others. Anything else before we close this one?
We appreciate your patience, and thanks for hanging in there with us.
Absolutely. If that's going to do it for this week, until next time, I'm Glenn.
I'm Sean.
And I'm Keith.
Cheers.
Good night, everybody.
Be seeing you.
Thanks for listening.
You have been listening to Traveling the Vortex. Doctor Who and all of its associated programs are owned and trademarked by the BBC. No infringement is intended or implied.
Direction Point! Direction Point!
A Doctor Who Podcast Network.